What up, y'all? What up, what up, what up, what up? Welcome back. Welcome back to the award-winning 101.7 The Truth, live from the American Family Insurance Studios. It's your boy, Ray Nitty, holding it down on the grapevine. DJ Brother Z holding me down with the production and sound. How y'all feeling, man? We talking about that munyan, man. We talking about that money, man. LaRon Taylor says 6 years ago he made over $150 being in a National Domino's commercial. He says, I spent maybe 30% of that paying off debt and blew the rest. What an idiot, he says. I say, man, you at least had the thought process to be like, let me pay off some debt. Somehow there's somebody in this world, LaRon, that may have gotten $150,000 with debt. They got that and did not pay off the debt, just went further into debt. I know it is. I know it is. But we was just talking about Moderna, how that shot up. It just shot up from $22 was the low at some point this year to now it has a high of $176. So each share, if you got in at a nice price, let's say you got in at that $22 mark, that $20 mark, each share you had, you profit $150. But here's the thing about stocks. That's why you got to be careful. And I am not a financial advisor, so do not make any financial decisions based off of anything I'm saying up here today. Stocks go up and they go down. So as fast as Moderna shot up to 176 yesterday, somebody who hasn't got the right mental fortitude or the right training to be like, let me wait, see what's happening. They might be like, they might have that FOMO, fear of missing out. So they're going to jump in. They might jump in at 150. 160, you know, it's like, oh, man, it got up to 176. I got to get some of that. So now they done bought 100 shares at 150, 160, thinking they about to run back up. But today, Moderna is back down. It's still up from where it was at yesterday. But if you bought in at the high spot, it's down to 133 today. So you would have lost money. And that's why I just prioritize purchasing high quality companies. Microsoft, Google, Apple, and a few ETFs. But learning when to get in these companies is what's important. Because you don't want to buy at the high point. You're gonna lose money every time. All right? So let's keep this going, y'all. We're talking about the real gap. We talked about the 401ks. We talk about how many of us actually invest in stocks. It says only 53 to 58% of Black Americans own stocks at all, compared to 61 to 70% of whites. I thought that number was pretty high for us. So we're making some progress, y'all. So here's the upside. Participation among Black investors under 40 has been closing the gap fast. 68% of young Black adults now invest, compared to 57% of young white adults in the same recent survey. So we getting there. We getting there. We still got a generation of us that don't trust things like banks and the stock markets. Still got a few of our boomers that's burying their cash or hiding their money under a mattress or shoebox. And Black first-time investors are three times more likely than white first-time investors to have started during a recent market entry point. Barr says because they invest, dumped the system, wait for people to hop on the bandwagon, then those big investors going to drop out the stock and take your money. Yep. 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 They prop up the market and they crash it. They put a whole bunch of money into certain companies, certain stocks, or they pull it out. And we get left holding the bag. That's why it's important to understand what you're investing in. So why this all connects, y'all? I only got a couple more minutes here with y'all before we got Jazzy stepping into the booth. A Credit Suisse study found that even among the wealthiest 5% of black households, they're still more likely to hold safe assets, real estate, bonds, life insurance, than stocks. Meaning even black families who've built wealth are building it more slowly than white families with similar income because of what they're invested in. I told y'all, we just don't trust certain things. Life insurance protects your family if you're gone tomorrow. Investing grows what your family has 20 years from now. Most people only have one of the two. Which one you missing? 833-212-1017. 833-212-1017. Which one are you missing? Do you have both? Life insurance and investing in stocks? I just want to know. We're going to bring this home. Bringing it home, wrapping it up, I promise you. And this is Fact Check confirmed via Wisconsin Policy Forum, UW-Madison's Institute for Research on Poverty and the Wealth in Milwaukee 2025 report. Milwaukee's black home ownership rate sits at roughly 27.5%. That's less than half the white home ownership rate at 72%. Wisconsin as a whole has one of the widest black-white home ownership gaps of any state in the country. And that's why I ask of politicians, what are you going to do for black Wisconsinites? I'm going to keep it going. I only got a couple more minutes. Nationally, the average white household has a net worth of $171,000, about 10 times higher than the average black household, $17,150. Mark Levine, a UWM economist, has found black Milwaukeeans are actually worse off financially today relative to white residents that they were 40 to 50 years ago. So we worse off today. A black household in Milwaukee earning over $100,000 a year is twice as likely to live in a concentrated poverty neighborhood as a white household earning under $10,000 a year, meaning income alone doesn't buy the same neighborhood access. Black-owned employer businesses in Wisconsin generate an average of just 42 cents for every dollar generated by white-owned businesses. A direct reflection of unequal access to commercial lending and capital. We talked about this. Somebody said it in the chat. This ain't just history. It's still actively happening. Black households continue to face higher mortgage loans, denial rates, and higher interest rates than white households with comparable income and credit. And this is according to the UW-Madison housing researchers. So the $40 trillion national number, y'all, the credit card debt number, the life insurance investing gap, none of it exists in a vacuum. Redlining, lending discrimination, lower home ownership access in Milwaukee specifically compound every single one of the national trends this show covered today. I felt like we was teaching today. I felt like we taught something today. So local groups like ACT Housing, Take Root Milwaukee, specifically help Black and Latino families navigate the home buying and credit building process. So just in case anybody is looking for somebody to talk to, holler at them. All right? And I'm going to share this Black Pioneer again. We shared this of the day. Today's Black Financial Pioneer is Maggie Lena Walker, 1864 to 1934. In 1903, Maggie Lena founded St. Luke Penny Savings Bank in Richmond, Virginia, becoming the first Black woman to charter and serve as president of a bank in the United States. Born to a formerly enslaved mother, Walker built the bank specifically so Black families could access mortgages and financial services white-owned banks refused them. By 1924, it had helped more than 700 Black families buy their own homes. All right? I would read some more, man, but I gotta make some way for Shannon. Let us have a bank that will take, Jazzy. Let us have a bank that will take the nickels and turn them into dollars. Quote by Maggie Lena Walker. Don't go anywhere, y'all. To Tap In is next with Miss Jazzy, Jazz Tyler.
Baby girl, you're so fine, though. 101.7 The Truth, it's your girl Jazz Tyler. We are live and direct. If you are just now joining us, we are talking about data and our students, right? So as an educator and as a parent and as someone who has health issues and had health issues, I have had my share of data breaches and data leaks, quote unquote. I personally believe that our data is always being sold. And somehow they say that it's being leaked, and then we end up with some type of lawsuit, and then they say, hey, fill this form out so you can receive maybe $90 in the mail. So basically, it's like a $2 to $5 million lawsuit. Everybody who was affected got to bust it down, and you get $90 because your data was sold, even though they tell you that it was leaked. So apparently, iReady, which is a technology platform, educational technology platform that is used in school, apparently has been utilizing and using students' data without the proper permission from the parents. And we were before we went to break, we were also talking about a similar situation with LifeTouch, which is one of the country's largest school photography companies, and how they became subjected to viral claims connecting them to Jeffrey Epstein. The viral theory grew from a corporate ownership connection involving Shutterfly, Apollo Global Management, and Apollo's former leader, Leon Black, whose financial relationship with Epstein has been documented, right? But the timeline matters. So apparently Apollo managed funds acquired Shutterfly in September of 2019, which was after Epstein died. And some school districts still canceled or reconsidered picture day arrangements because parents were alarmed. So again, it's not saying that they had anything to do with it, but it's the fact that the person who owned these platforms, right? Shutterfly, Apollo Global Management, and LifeTouch. The fact that he had any type of financial ties, period, when it comes to Epstein is insane. So, again, going back to the data piece, when we're talking about the iReady, right, the way that is presented to us as parents is, hey, we have a educational technology platform that we utilize in order to teach our students, in order to teach your child. So we'll provide you with the username and you have to create the password. We'll give you the student ID, blah, blah, blah. We want you to sign on and your student has to use this. Remind you, this is not an option. This is not an option. They're not saying, hey, similar to shots. You don't want to, your children don't take shots. You could just fill out this form, blame it on religion, whatever the case may be. You have an option. They can still be enrolled. But with technology, it's not an option. Why? Because this is what they have adapted to use in order to teach. And now that means that our babies are subjected, as well as our information, is subjected to being leaked and sold and released without our permission. And it's scary, because when you really realize how much information on you is out there, right? So if you are a person who like to freeze your credit, or, you know, have credit alerts to make sure your information is not on the black web and so on and so on, you understand how serious it is for us as adults when we're talking about our information and the search engines we put into what we look up on the internet, when we have our personal information stored in our iPhones, from our addresses to our full names to debit cards, credit cards, health, everything is tied to technology. So if it's happening to us as adults, you gotta know that it's also happening to our babies. And obviously there's kind of like nothing we could do about it, but what we can do is become more informed and start asking more questions. And these questions, again, should be raised. These are questions that the superintendent should be answering, that the teachers and principals should be answering, right? And I know that they'll say, have you have to sign off on it and so on, but at the beginning of every school year, there should be some type of policy set in place to where we have full information, terms and conditions, everything that the school receives when it comes to these educational technology platforms. Who owns them? Again, I talked about this a few weeks ago, right? When we're talking about the school, who sits on the board at the school, right? Who owns the corporate? Who's making the decisions? It has to be the same thing when it comes to these platforms that our children use. Just like we do it with Roblox and everything else, we have to do it with this. Who owns these companies? Who's calling the shots? Who's obtaining the data? And what are they using the data for? So there has been quite a few incidents, right? There was a Canvas LMS incident. The hacker group Shine Hunters claimed to steal up to 275 million records across nearly 9,000 educational institutions. Instructure acknowledged an intrusion affecting names, user IDs, school emails, and internal messaging through total third-party extortion claims, right? PowerSchool breach. PowerSchool, this is something that we use here in the state of Wisconsin. A massive breach exposed records tied to roughly 62 million students, compromised data varied by district, ranging from basic enrollment and contact facts to limited medical notes, and in a fraction of cases, Social Security numbers, right? So that means that there is at least one for sure, because I know for a fact that PowerSchool is used here in the state of Wisconsin, right? We know that there has been one out of the three educational technology platforms that I just mentioned that has records, right? There was a breach, roughly 62 million students, not just basic information, not just basic enrollment, but medical information, Social Security numbers, right? Basic information includes full name, student ID numbers, and school issued email addresses. Communications includes internal course messages, teacher feedback, and system notifications. Sensitive details in specific district platforms or high impact breaches, limited medical alerts, special education markers like the IEPs or government identifiers have been at risk. So our babies' information are at risk every single day. Anything we do with technology, obviously, is going to be at risk. But again, the fact that our students, our children, information is being exposed, right? And we don't have any knowledge of it. Not only that, whenever there is a situation regarding a breach when it comes to our kids, our children, information with the school educational technology systems, it is indeed the school's responsibility to notify the families. So the fact that we're sitting here talking about over 62 million students, our children. Information has been spread without our consent, and not anybody from the school system sends out a letter, sends out anything. If you're just now joining us, I mentioned before break, if you have, you know, if you go to certain hospitals, you might receive emails that say, hey, there's a data breach. If you went to that, there's a data breach. Fill out this form. There's a lawsuit. You'll receive a certain amount of money. Da, 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 da. Right. So we know that it happens. It's happening with our children as well. But the point is, at least we're notified. The fact that this has happened and it continues to happen every year with platforms that our children use and utilize, and we're not notified properly, that is a problem. That is a problem, right? We already have to go above and beyond to protect them from games like Roblox and all of the other, whatever, playing online, you know, all of the technology, social media, YouTube, everything. And now we have to make sure we protect them from the educational technology platforms that the school system use. So I'm not blaming the schools, right? They're not the one hacking the information. But it is, again, their responsibility. It is, again, their responsibility to make sure that they make us aware. Pivoting. I want to talk about something that I've seen online. Milwaukee alderman Lamont Westmoreland posted an image Tuesday night that appeared to show a vehicle crushed under a fallen tree after a severe weather storm, right?
Not just any vehicle.
Not just any vehicle, Brother Z. What vehicle was it?
The Super Mario Kart.
The Super Mario Kart. And it looked mad real, and guess what? It was not. This is the same alderman who a couple of years ago made a comment about weave tumbling down Lisbon Avenue, right? And I took that personal. Like, he taking shots at black women, right? So to see that he created an AI picture for whatever reason is not surprising to me. It is not surprising. Apparently, Fox 6 reported that the image was AI generated. Alderman Westmoreland acknowledged that it was fake and later added a disclaimer. He said he used it to grab attention while sharing real information about reporting the damage from the storm. And there's context behind the object that he chose. So Westmoreland has criticized the cost of the moving city vehicle, which is tied to Milwaukee's Vision Zero effort. So, yes, there was humor and political commentary in it. But I'm interested in the larger problem. And we're going to talk about that after the break. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler, 101.7 of the Truth.
Baby, like smooth. What? Can you teach me how to dug it? You know why? Cause all the girls love me. Hey. All I need
101.7 The Truth. This your girl Jazz Tyler. We are live and direct at the award-winning 101.7 The Truth at the American Family Insurance Studio in the beautiful heart of downtown Milwaukee. And you have officially been tapped in. If you are just now joining us, before we went to break, I was talking about this fake AI-generated post that an alderman in the city of Milwaukee posted, according to Fox 6 News. Alderman Lamont Westmoreland's initial Facebook post went up at 11:26 p.m. on Tuesday after severe weather watches and warnings expired. It included a fake image of the art car crushed underneath a tree with a caption that stated, "Looks like the big bad wolf came through Milwaukee tonight. He huffed, he puffed, and he blew quite a few trees down. Tonight's storm has left down in damaged trees throughout the city." Westmoreland's post then provided information on how to contact the city about fallen trees and debris, followed by a reminder for residents to please stay safe and use caution around downed trees and branches, particularly if power lines are involved. I don't even know what to make of this. I don't understand the logic behind being an elected official creating a false picture of a fallen tree smashing a car. It kind of puts me in the mind frame of like was he taking shots at the city? Was he trying to say that they don't work fast enough when it comes to moving debris and so on and so on? Again, I don't. It doesn't make sense. But
could be a shot at the car.
Could be a shot at the car too. I don't know if it is proper for an elected official to post anything that is unauthentic, because then it begins to raise questions about validity. You know, can we trust what you say now? You have a history of talking about tumbleweaves rolling down Lisbon, right? Taking shots because your wife don't wear weave. Right? Talking about the trash. But we never see you out there picking up nothing. And now he's posting fake AI-generated pictures. So we are now living in a period where photographic evidence is no longer automatically evidence. Think about how quickly that happened, right? Our parents told us, don't believe everything you hear. And the internet taught us, don't believe everything you read. AI is teaching our children, don't automatically believe what you see with your own eyes. So today it's a fake tree falling on an art car, but the same technology can be used to create an image of a politician somewhere they never went, a person committing an act they never committed, disaster damage that never happened, or a public figure standing beside somebody they never met. And once an image gets shared, screenshotted, and reposted, the correction has to chase the original around the internet. So, again, I think that's why public officials, journalists, schools, and institutions need to think seriously about labeling synthetic media. Not because every joke is a national emergency, but because trust is. If we, the people, become conditioned to assume everything could be fake, eventually real evidence loses some of its power too. So Fox 6 News asked Alderman Westmoreland about the posting image via email on Wednesday morning. And less than an hour after the inquiry, he responded and added a disclaimer on his Facebook post. He then shared the same disclaimer in response to the email. The car wasn't actually crushed by a tree. The image was created to grab people's attention, remind residents to report down and damaged trees, and make sure they know how to report them to the city, he wrote. And yes, I purposely used that car. For those who remember, I was pretty vocal about the taxpayer-funded car when it was rolled out as a way to bring attention to reckless driving. I thought it was an embarrassment and a wasteful use of tax dollars. So when I needed a vehicle for this photo, there really was only one choice. It felt like perfect opportunity. The tree damage is real. The car damage, not so much. So what car are we talking about, and why is it a big deal? What is the Mobile City Art Car? The Moving City was meant to highlight the dangers of reckless driving, and it cost Milwaukee $88,000. It was part of the city's Vision Zero goal to eliminate traffic deaths by 2037. So reducing traffic issues is about an all-of-the-above approach, having creative things that captures the public's attention and start conversations and bring people to us at events to talk about why we put a speed bump in their neighborhood and why they might be seeing a different project is a real positive. And this is according to the Vision Zero policy director, as far as her response. So basically he had an issue with the fact that it cost $88,000 for this project, including this art car. And he decided to pretty much take a shot. In my opinion, that's what he did. He took a shot at them by putting the car, he's saying, under the tree. He's saying that the tree damage is real, but the car wasn't real. You know, all in all, I just think it's tacky. I think it's tacky. What is wrong with the simple post? There was so much video going around about real incidents, right? But don't use things that people are really going through for your own political agenda. That is the purpose of me talking about this. You have a political agenda against this project because they use $88,000 of taxpayers' dollars to make us aware about something they were trying to do to combat people from dying when it comes to road rage and speeding. And during a time where there were people who were really affected in major ways, we're talking trees falling on houses. We're talking trees falling on cars being uprooted by the roots. Power outages, flooding. People are really, we're really going through it or experiencing some type of issue. And you chose to utilize your platform to take the severity of a natural disaster to attack an issue that you have politically. That's foul, period. That's foul. A better post would have been a picture of the tree by itself, wishing and hoping that everyone was safe and okay, right? Yet you are posting a fake AI-generated picture where the car is fake, but the tree is not, taking a shot at the project and telling people to make sure that they call DPW. Not, hey, all of the citizens in my district, are you guys okay? Do you need help? Do you need me to do anything? How can I assist you? Instead of using the platform to say and do that, he chose to use a fake picture to capitalize off of the natural disaster. And again, that just speaks to his character. And I don't know the man, so I don't dislike him. I'm just saying, this is, I've seen multiple things similar to this. And again, it's just, it doesn't make sense to me. I want to talk about moving on from this because I don't even want to give that too much of my time. I want to talk about a story that is far more serious. Milwaukee Public Schools is under a federal civil rights investigation involving race and discipline. And the numbers explain why this story cannot be reduced to just a headline. So if you guys have not been paying attention or if it didn't come across your news feed, the U.S. Department of Education Office for Civil Rights announced an investigation into the Milwaukee Public Schools system this week. Federal officers say they are examining whether race is being improperly considered in student disciplinary practices. MPS is one of two districts named in this announcement. So MPS said it received notice and needed additional information before it could appropriately respond. Now, here is the history that makes this complicated. A previous federal civil rights investigation pushed MPS to reform its discipline practices after finding more than 100 instances over a two-year period in which Black students were expelled while white students were suspended for similar infractions. Now look at the more recent Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction data reported by Milwaukee Neighborhood News Services. During the 24 through 25 school year, Black MPS students were involved in about 54% of incidents that resulted in disciplinary action. But Black students accounted for 78% of suspensions and 86% of expulsions. So let's run that back, right? 44% of Black students were disciplined, 68% were suspended, 86% were expelled. So when people say, why are we talking about race? That is why. Race is a part of the discussion. At the same time, the current federal government isn't arguing that schools cannot treat students differently based on race in an effort to correct the disparities. That creates a real policy tension. How do you address racial disparities without assigning different consequences because of race, right? I want to see conduct. I want to see consequences. I want to see comparable cases. I want to know whether teachers are supported. I want to know whether students receive due process. And I've actually experienced something similar to this with my son, and he was only in fifth grade at the time. He was going to Niskayra, which is a Milwaukee public school. This was about 10 years ago. And there was a boy who kept bothering him, consistently bothering him in the classroom. So much to the point, like my children, well, I'll say my son, because my oldest daughter, that's a whole nother beast right there. But my son is not the type of person that bothers people. You know, he don't start anything, but he will finish it and stand up for himself. And at this time, he was 9 years old, 10 years old, and this boy kept bothering him in the classroom. So one of the things that I do teach him is stand up for himself. Obviously, just like y'all, don't allow nobody to put their hands on you. They can talk crazy, whatever, but don't allow nobody to put their hands on you. They get into a fight. They're 10 years old. The teacher decides to jump in the middle of both of them. The boy he was fighting was not a young black boy. He was a boy of another ethnicity. She jumps in the middle of them while they're fighting and then proceeds to say that she was hit purposely by my son. He's trying to fight the boy. You jumping in the middle, breaking up the fight. Anybody, adult or child, knows that when that happens, you're bound to get hit. And the document and the words she used against my son versus the other one blew my mind. We're going to talk about it when we come back from break. This your girl, Jazz Tyler. Do not touch that dial. 101.7 The Truth. You are officially tapped in with your girl, Jazz Tyler, at the award-winning 101.7 The Truth. If you are just now joining us, we are talking about the federal civil rights investigation with Milwaukee Public School. A previous federal civil rights investigation pushed MPS to reform its discipline practices after finding more than 100 instances over a two-year period in which black students were expelled while white students were suspended for similar infractions. Now look at more recent Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction data reported by Milwaukee Neighborhood News Services. So I was explaining to you all that 44% of the disciplinary incidents were pertaining to black students. 68% of black students were suspended and 86% were expelled. And I was also giving a testimony to my own experience with my son when he was 10 years old, about 10 years ago. There was a situation where he was having an altercation with a boy of another ethnicity who was not black. Kept bothering him to the point where I just told him, you know, if he runs up, whatever you do, if he put his hands on you, defend yourself. And that's what happened. His teacher, who at the time was white, decided to jump in the middle of the fight to break the fight up, which she's supposed to, right? But as an adult, you know that whenever you come in between, especially young men, no matter what color they are, there is a chance that you are bound to get hit. She was not hitting her face or anything like that. She just jumped in while they're in the middle of swinging blows and got hit. And obviously, we know who she blamed and said that my son intentionally hit her, right? Now, at this time, their principal was a black older gentleman. And I asked him to use his common sense. In the event there is a fight and you choose to break up the fight, there is a probability that you're going to somehow be affected, maybe or maybe not, right? And we're talking about 10-year-old boys. They're not fighting like adults where they're trying to kill each other. They're just passing licks because they're, you know, frustrated and angry with each other. And she utilized verbiage in the document that lets me know that, well, not lets me know because I've been new, but confirmed the school to prison pipeline. What are you talking about, Jazz? I'm talking about words that goes inside of a jail report. Words, mind you, she pushed for an expulsion. Words that could have potentially caused my son to not go to a good school, all because of her jumping in it, right? Meanwhile, the young man that he was fighting, he didn't even get rolled up or suspended. He was the one who started the incident. I immediately pulled my son out of that school, but most importantly, I was so disappointed and frustrated with the principal at that time. There is no way that a black man in that seat, in that position, who comes from the inner city of Milwaukee, should not have defended him to some degree or defended the situation and made it fair. Making it fair is, yes, they both are suspended. They both were a part of it, even though the other boy started it. Just suspend both of them and call it a day. But for whatever reason, she felt like targeting my child, in which it wasn't the first time, right? It's like she always had an issue with the little black kids. She don't treat them the same. There's no nurturing whenever I would encounter her. How do I know? Because I'm an active parent. I do pop-ups. I'm going on field trips. I'm sitting on the parent advisory boards. I'm calling. I'm doing everything. Parent-teacher conferences. I want to see how my child responds to this environment and the person that is teaching him. And when I seen it, I immediately pulled him away from that school. I took him out of that school. I have no problem with removing my children from schools that don't serve them. I promise you I don't, especially when we're talking about a teacher who purposely put something in this report that could have gotten my son expelled, right? So I want to be clear, right? I do understand that teachers deserve safe classrooms. Students deserve safe classrooms as well. A student who harms somebody or seriously disrupt learning may need consequences. Hello, yes, suspension, right? Not all. Now, I'm a little biased because I don't always feel like a suspension is necessary. And what do I mean by that? When you get to a certain grade, they're in, when you're dealing with certain students, you're able to have conversations with them to figure out the core issue to try and solve it. Now, that's not the case with everything, but you have to discern. You have to use your discernment to figure out which one you should and which one you shouldn't. You can't just apply this protocol to every situation, because that one time you apply it, maybe that one time that make that child feel like they want to give up and don't want to come back, right? All you see is, hey, they're fighting, whatever the case may be, and then that's it. No one's talking about the underlying issues. No one's talking about what's going on outside of school. No one's talking about what's happening in school, right? And a lot of our children are not going to confide in some teachers because they don't feel that their relationship is strong. So accountability and exclusion are not automatically the same thing. Research has repeatedly found an association between excluding somebody based on discipline and later contact them being contacted or involved in the justice system. So one study comparing suspended youth with similar non-suspended youth found that years later, the suspended group had higher rates of arrests, repeated arrests, imprisonment, and probation. And researchers tried to account for dozens of factors that existed before the first suspension. Other economic research has found that attending a school with a higher rate to suspend students can be associated with lower educational attainment and greater adult criminal justice involvement. That does not mean suspension automatically causes incarceration. A child can be suspended and go home, go on to be become a doctor. A child can never be suspended and later be incarcerated. Human beings are not equations. That is the point. But if exclusion from school is consistently associated with worse long-term outcomes, then we should care about what happens after we send a child home. What instruction did they miss? What happens if the home is unstable? What happens after the third suspension? At what point does a child stop believing school is a place where they belong? And that is what I want y'all to think about today. Accountability and exclusion are not the same thing. Yes, you can correct behavior without deciding a human being is disposable. And I am not shocked by the allegations of over 100 students being reported within a 2-year span in the Milwaukee public school system that they were being treated differently. My daughter finished her last senior year at Hamilton High School, and she went through some things. Her dad went through some things, and she was affected by it, and they began to treat her a certain way, right? Again, the story with my son, being an educator, I see it. The truth of the matter is, majority of these schools have leadership of people who do not serve our demographic. That is the truth. They don't understand where we come from. They don't understand what we go through. All they see is numbers and money and politics. Everyone is using their own agenda off the backs of the babies. And when they have real life scenarios and situations, no one wants to deal with it. No one wants to deal with the child who is acting a fool all the time and constantly being suspended because for whatever reasons. 9 times out of 10 is something that's happening outside of home. But again, the bigger picture is that the leadership, a lot of the leadership in these schools, especially in the public school system, are coming from people and teachers who do not serve our demographic. They don't even live in the city of Milwaukee. And if they do, they don't live around the demographic that they serve. What demographic am I talking about? Our black babies. Our black babies. If you can see the way that some of them are treated, right? One of the reasons why I sent, so my youngest daughter, Callie, Callie is 9. She's entering into the 4th grade. And Callie has been homeschooled the past couple of years. She's been to other schools as well because of the line of work that I was in. I had to travel. I had to travel so much and I had to move around. So homeschool became easier, right? And when she was in a school setting, she was around a diverse environment. But when we got back to Milwaukee, safety was my main concern. So I wanted her to go to a school where the teachers and the staff were predominantly black. I wanted her to get that experience because I needed her to understand that there are teachers that care that look like you. All of the teachers that I had that impacted me, except for one, which is Miss Jacqueline, she's white. But Miss Iria Caldwell at Hartford Elementary, Miss Brenda Harvey, Miss Pamela Bowden, right? These are Miss Aziza Islam. These are teachers that I've had from K-4 through elementary, Miss Jacqueline in middle school, Miss Bowden in high school. Other than one, these were prominent black women. They understood. They used to come do house visits. When we were younger, we used to get house visits from our teachers. And they impacted me in such a major way. And that is part of the reason why I am successful today. And that's what our babies need. Let's finish this conversation. We got to go to break. Do not touch that dial. It's your girl, Jazz Tyler.